Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Catholicism Rocks. My name is William Hemsworth, partner and director here at Catholicism Rocks. Really excited to have our guest today, Bernadette Smith. She's the founder of Precious Life, as a pro-life organization in Northern Ireland. Bernadette, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. Weather's not great here in Ireland because it rains an awful lot. So apart from that, yeah, I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Good. Well, here in Tucson, Arizona, it actually rained all day yesterday. So really unusual
Oh.
here, but we'll take it. We're in the desert, so we need it. So
Oh, yeah. Well, we need the sun here, but we shouldn't complain. Can't do much about the weather, but so yeah, it's good to meet you, William. Thank you for this opportunity to share with you today all about the amazing work of Precious Life in Northern Ireland. I mean, I know your listeners will be thinking, well, Northern Ireland, Ireland. Ireland's a very small country. And there's we have the counties in the south of Ireland, and we've got 32 counties. Six of them are in the north. But like, in this battle for life, there's no border really, so it's a movement, a pro-life movement that we work together in the counties in the area. It's a wee bit like the United States. You have different states, we have counties here in Ireland. So, I'm Irish. Whether I'm Northern Irish or Southern Irish, I'm Irish. So yeah, it's
And like you said, the pro-life movement has no borders. We're all in this fight together trying to save these precious children. So, what got you started in the pro-life movement, and what made you decide to start Precious Life?
Well, you could say I was brought up in a very pro-life family, a very Catholic family with great devotion to the Holy Family, to Saint Joseph and Our Lady. My mother had was pregnant with during the war. She became pregnant. She was engaged to an American soldier, and she became pregnant, and he left, went back to America, and she never set eyes on him again. So what happened then? There was such a stigma around pregnancy at that time, out of wedlock pregnancy. But my mother's family were just so, protective over my mother, who's got Mary, and they just supported her through that. She then met my father, and he adopted James, God rest his soul, my brother, who recently died. So that's always been, we were sort of born into a family of eight. There's eight of us. So we always knew life was very precious, life was sacred. And our mother told us, from we were growing up, teaching us about chastity and teaching us about the importance of, protecting ourselves as girls. There were six girls. And, and she would have told us about James, never regretting that she gave birth to James. But, it was a lesson in terms of, being pregnant outside of wedlock. So we always cherished life, and our father, an amazing man called Francis, who was born in the Feast of Saint Joseph, he became like the protector of and looked after and adopted my brother. So even at that, we just were people of faith, grew up. Northern Ireland, as part of the UK, we didn't have abortion. So it was a subject that no one ever wanted to talk about. I mean, it was a horror that, in any conversation I can remember as a child going to England one time with my parents, because my sister lived there when she was married, and abortion being legal there. And it was just like the unheard of thing to do, to destroy a little baby in the womb. So anyway, it never affected my life as such, apart from I knew the preciousness of life. As I grew up, I had a friend who confided in me. I think it was about 17 that she was pregnant, and very concerned, and I assured her of my support. But what happened, inside a week of having that conversation with her, she came back into the workplace totally transformed. I knew something had happened. I knew she wasn't the same girl. And then she shared with me that her parents took her to England for an abortion. That would have been my first like real encounter with the effects of abortion on women in particular. I didn't really think much of, what the procedure or what it did to unborn children. But anyway, I was always there for her. She was very distraught over this abortion, always cried, went out and drank too much alcohol, and I was always the one that, held her and comforted her through that time. But then, so then I was married when I was 19, went on to have my own children. And of course, you have your ultrasound scans and you're a wee bit more involved in the, the fetal development and stuff. But when I had my third child, in particular, I went to this conference. It was like a family conference. There was American speakers there. It was all about the divine mercy of Jesus, but there was also pro-life speakers there. And I went to Dublin, and there's a whole big story anyway. But anyway, by hook or by crook, I was going to this conference, and I went there, picked up some brochures off a table, and went in to listen to one of the speakers, and just happened to be fumbling in my bag, waiting for the speaker to start, and opened that brochure, and it was like inside a few seconds, my whole world transformed, because I looked at the body of a the broken body of a little baby that had been aborted, and that was my first encounter of the horror. I think I like disappeared into some sort of a bubble because I just sat there in shock. My heart was broken. I started to, cry. I was by myself and I just sort of sat there, and I didn't want anybody to look because I was like, oh my God, what's going on here? And it was like that moment my life changed dramatically. I knew life was never going to be the same again. And that was in Dublin in Ireland. And happened to be one of the speakers who is a good friend of mine, Reverend Pat Mahoney from Washington, DC. He's actually on the board of directors of my pregnancy care center here in Belfast. And he was speaking and he started to talk about, the challenge that we were all under to keep abortion out of Ireland. So then I started to think about it. And so anyway, I left the conference, totally changed, went home, talked to my husband, showed him the brochure, and he was the same. And I went to my prayer, a prayer meeting on the Tuesday night after the Saturday weekend, and shared with my friends and the prayer group. I actually found out it was a Divine Mercy prayer group, and we met for coffee after. And I shared with them about this horror, and they equally became so broken about it that we started to pray more about the life issue. Within a week, I had formed Precious Life without even realizing I was embarking on the greatest transformation of life for me. I mean, had three children. I worked in fashion retail just part-time, just my husband had a qu quite a stressful job as well. But like it was like if God was calling me to that, to the mission for life. I really prayed about it. I went to the church one day and I did like a 9 afternoon novena to the Divine Mercy by doing the Stations of the Cross. And I just asked for a sign. I just said, what can I do? What can one person? I had no understanding of politics, of public speaking, or, I was like a very shy, ordinary girl who just like loved life, looked after my children, did a part-time job, loved fashion. Fashion was my passion. And all of a sudden, like it was like if the good Lord just picked me up, threw me into this massive battle. I then had signed a form that day in Dublin, and before I knew it, I was being invited inside a few weeks to attend a gathering of pro-life, young people. I mean, I was younger then, so I mean that's 27 years ago I formed Precious Life, so I was a lot younger. So I went there and started to meet with like-minded people, learn. It was like a training day, and just realized that God was calling me to this. I got the sign that I prayed for. It was a very simple sign without giving any more information. I just asked for the sign. I just said, if this is what you want me to do for the rest of my life, or for as long as you've called me, then I say yes. And my husband was in total agreement. We he was also very challenged, and to this day he's 100% supports me. He gave up his job as well to work alongside of me about 15 years ago. So it's like, it's what we do. Also, my husband became a convert. I married a Protestant, and through the pro-life movement and through my faith and the need to have a very strong faith, As you know, this is a spiritual battle unless we have, the tools like daily mass, adoration, or Holy Rosary, and all the sacraments. We'd be easily knocked out. So it was like a fifth then God used the journey of the movement to draw my husband Derek into the Catholic faith. And so he's a Catholic now, 20 years. So
Great.
yes, so it's like, yeah, it was just like a revelation, a realization of what abortion, how it affects the babies. And then I just decided to take that message out to out onto the streets. Like Pope John Paul II told the youth of Denver at that time, go out into the streets and trading places, and woe to you if you do not succeed in defending life. I can remember that in the 90s because I was married, but I still was a young girl, and I remember following Saint Pope John Paul, or Pope John Paul II at that time, and he was one of my great heroes, and I had a great privilege of writing for one of the national newspapers how, when he died, how his life had affected me. And it had affected me greatly in terms of he was like one of the greatest pro-life popes of this generation.
Absolutely.
And I went to Rome to World Youth Day in 2000. I had just had my fourth baby, and there was a conference that I was invited to speak at. So that was, for me, he said, do not be afraid to be the saints of the new millennium, and we were called, and I was just so inspired. So I had sort of the opportunity to do an article for the one of the newspapers here. So you could say that's my journey, and I've never looked back. I'd like to run for the hills. I live below just near the mountain where St. Patrick was held for a slave as a slave for 6 years.
Oh, wow.
I'd like to sometimes go up that hill and just sit there and just say, can someone else do it? But then, you rise above the challenges, the persecutions, and just, it's a hard battle. And the pro-life movement is very hard. Like, we've been really challenged with the enforced law from Britain. We've been fighting for over 20 years, and then the British government just forced abortion legislation on Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland was once upon a time the most pro-life government in Europe. We had the most pro-life government, even more pro-life than the Irish Republic. So it's like it is a fierce battle, but some of us God has appointed for these times, and I do feel that God has called me, and in that calling he equipped me to do what I do 27 years later.
Now, you mentioned this forced law that came over from Britain. Can you tell us a little about that, about how that came about? Because I'm here in the US, I mean, we read a little bit about it, but I know there's a lot more to the story.
Well, I mean, the Irish Republic, the south of Ireland, they voted in a referendum to change their life. Their personhood legislation was totally repealed. So I refer to it as personhood because babies were protected in the Irish Republic. So that was in 2018. On the day that there was a great celebration of demonic forces that came together at the castle, Dublin Castle, two of the Sinn Féin, politicians, they would be one of the All-Ireland parties, Irish parties, they held a sign that said, "The North is next." That was 2018. So there was a major threat then. Now, we didn't underestimate that. We didn't ignore that because we were constantly lobbying. Our work is very much on the streets. We hold like rallies, marches, life chains, like street outreaches. My other colleagues are out today in Belfast City Centre. So we would, put all that information in and leaflets, give out to the public. So we kept the work going. But by 2019, you could see things changing. The Sinn Féin and some of the so-called nationalist Catholic politicians were lobbying with the British government, calling for them to introduce abortion here to bring us in line with the UK, to allow abortion here up to the moment of birth. So what happened during a time of government suspension. Here in Northern Ireland, there's always, like, the politics of if I don't get my way, I'll pull the government down. There's two parties, Sinn Féin and the Democratic Unionist Party. DUP is pro-life, Sinn Féin is pro-abortion. So what happened during that time, when the government was down, we, the Irish people, were Northern Irish people, were given an ultimatum. So our government was told, if you don't set this government up again and get it up and running again, we will bring abortion in. So an amendment was put on the end of a mundane type of a just discussion bill about how we could, fund our health service and, the economy. And on the end of that bill in the UK Parliament, abortion and gay marriage, homosexual marriage, was included. So the vast majority of MPs, members of Parliament for Westminster for the UK, voted to bring abortion into Northern Ireland, to decriminalise, to allow abortion for any situation up to the moment of birth, and to allow for homosexual marriage. So then there was an ultimatum put to the our government. Well, if you get up and running by the 22nd of October 2019, then we will the bill won't pass. The legislation will fail. So we started, like rosary campaigns, lobby campaigns. We held a massive, big, the largest pro-life rally for life, March for Their Lives event. Over 20,000 people came out on the Friday night, and they silently stood in the Stormont grounds. The following day, in Belfast, city centre, over 20,000 people just took over. I mean, the whole streets were gridlocked with pro-life people. It was massive, for the size of Belfast, Northern Ireland. That was an amazing amount of people over 2 days. So everything was done humanly, spiritually. The church made statements, the Catholic Church, the Presbyterian Church, the four main churches. But on the 20 on the 22nd, the 21st, sorry, of October, there was a recall. So the recall was, our government have to come together with nationalists and unionists in an agreement. Now, the nationalists, Sinn Féin, who got their way, who wanted Britain to force abortion in, wouldn't come back into government. They said, no, unless we get the Irish language, unless we get what we want, we're not coming back in to form a government. The Democratic Unionist Party, who would be Protestant evangelicals, they were working and lobbying with another nationalist party in the hope that they would join the government and form it, even for 12 hours. If they could have done that for 12 hours, then the bill wouldn't have been introduced, and the following day they could have collapsed the government. It was easy done. But the other nationalist party, they walked out, and in my words to the media was, they pulled the plug. The life support machine was our personhood legislation. It's called the Offences Against the Person Act. It protected babies in the womb from the moment of conception. Now, there were minor amendments that protected the woman's life, but overall, a direct intentional abortion would have been totally illegal here. Then we had a later legislation, child destruction. So you could say our legislation was the strongest you could get. So what happened? The SDLP, Social Democratic Labour Party, they walked out. We were at Stormont that day. It was like, I would say one of the greatest tests of faith for us, for precious life, because there we had done everything. We had pleaded with God, we had fasted, prayed, had holy masses offered, everything that we could possibly do, but it wasn't enough. So we just said, Lord, God's still in charge, He's still in control. What we did, we wiped ourselves down, and the very next day we got up and we went and protested outside every single political party that let the babies down. We shamed them to the best of our ability. We called them out. But for this part of Ireland, it was too late. The Irish Republic, they voted in. The first country in the whole world voted to destroy their own little flesh and blood babies. We had it forced on us. So I would say it will go down as the greatest democratic attack, the greatest attack in democracy in the whole world. I mean, no other government would have overruled a government by saying we know better. They said, well, we're superior. But that is the way it's always been with the British government. Like, we're like Northern Ireland. Well, you'll do as we tell you because you're still under us, even though we have a devolved government. But that was October. By January, they all came together and set up the government and just forgot about the baby. So we've just really been fighting this battle every day. We said, well, look, this is when I set up pregnancy care centres. So that was really very important that we can save as many babies as we can through helping and supporting their mothers. We continue to lobby, we continue to inform, educate the public, protests and whatever, hold the public awareness events, because it's hearts and minds that need to be changed in order to change the government. Our government is now the most pro-abortion government, I would say, in Europe. So that's a challenge. I would find that quite challenging for my faith, because I mean, but do we just throw the towel in and say, no, we're not doing it anymore? I think we're called even to be more proactive and fight for those babies and be their voice, because Scripture tells us, rescue those who are about to be dragged to their slaughter, and God says, and don't say you didn't know, because you do know. So I think we're all held responsible. But it's like, even in the United States, I mean, I've been to the Washington March for Life countless times over the years. I've been to various different events, and it's like, the same wee group of people, that just keep, like, from one march to the next, they are the lights in those dark places. Here in Northern Ireland, things got worse, because now we have buffer zones where we held prayer vigils, rosary events, outreach, street counseling, like sidewalk counseling outside hospitals and abortion centers. They introduced buffer zones, so now we are restricted within like 150 to 200 meter area. And if you go within that area, then you'll end up with like a 2,500 fine. That's something like could be like $3,000. And if you continue to break that, then you'll end up in jail. So that was again another challenge for us, because we were trying to save the babies outside these places, and the law has now been introduced. And it's like every corner you turn, there's another battle waiting for you. But with our faith, then we just have to know that, God might be slow, but he's sure. He'll take care of this eventually. They are his babies. We're just the caretakers here. We're only trying to save them. And I would hope that, at some stage that, there'll be like a reawakening of people's conscience, and just that they will realize this horror, just like that day that my eyes were totally open, transformed. My life changed dramatically. I went on a different life than I ever thought I would have. But it's the mission God calls people to,
It was God. It
Yeah.
was God's plan for you. It was
Yeah,
God's plan for you.
I do. I truly believe it. It certainly wasn't my plan, because it's been a challenge, and I have to say, if I had have known what was ahead of me. As I say, like St. Patrick, St. Patrick was held as a slave. I might want to be held as a slave, say, please leave me alone. I don't want to do this anymore. But you get the strength from your faith. And if I wasn't a daily communicant, and I think that God had been preparing me way before the time that I was called. I have been a daily communicant for 4 years, really, coming up round about that. So it's like, I had the spiritual preparation, but it still means you still have to go and ask for Christ's protection and our Blessed Mother to give you
Absolutely.
that strength to do what we do.
I was watching your YouTube channel a couple of days ago, and you gave a speech at the Rally for Life, I believe it was. And at the end, said, "We will win." And I think that's important to understand that. I mean, this is a battle for sure, and it's going to take time. What are some things that we can do just as lay people to help in the pro-life movement?
Well, everything has to be based on your foundation, has to be prayer. And that's why I can confidently, and I will always say that, because we are people of faith, we are people of hope. And because we are, we don't have to know how the end result, but we know that we have the victory because Christ won the victory on the cross. So we will win the victory. All seems to be dark. I'd love to share just when I think when we talk here about St. Patrick in particular. Tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day. It's just my daughter's birthday is today. I was like, you know, in I thought I wanted her to be born in St. Patrick's Day, but she was born on the 16th, which is today. But I'm very close to St. Patrick. When I go out walking, I can see the Slemish Mountain there, and you know St. Patrick left an amazing prophecy. And at this time, Ireland is covered in darkness. The world is covered in darkness, and then it looks like there's no hope. It's like, you know, like people like yourselves in the States, even though Roe v. Wade has been overturned, you're still fighting that battle. You know, state by state, you're still trying to introduce, you know, personhood legislation and so on. But I think St. Patrick gave us that. He gave a vision, and you know, he was so disillusioned at one point. And sometimes we can become disillusioned because it looks like we're not winning. Well, we can't see the fruit sometimes, and we just think, well, abortion's still legal. But he had an amazing vision in which he was shown the state of the future of Ireland was revealed to him. And the whole island of Ireland was lit up in a great ball of light, like a furnace reached to the sky, and he clearly heard the voice of an angel saying to him, "Such is now the state of Ireland in the sight of the Lord." But then the flames faded over the land, with only torches shining and then only glimmering lights and in an increasing darkness. And then, last of all, a few live coals buried and burning deep in the earth. And the angel said, "This would be the successive states of the Irish people in the times that were coming." And that's the times we're living in now. You know, our faith, you know, the faith of Ireland in particular, and the world is sort of dimmed. We can't see, you know, we've lost that passion. But with tears rolling down his cheeks, St. Patrick prayed Psalm 77, and then he took the angel. Then the angel told him to look to the north. That's where I live, the north of Ireland. And that there he could see the hand of the Most High. And the saint lifted up his eyes and saw a little light arise in Ulster, which had struggled long in the darkness until at length the whole island was filled with the brightness of its glory and Ireland returned to its first state of all-pervading fire. I think we can all agree that Ireland is covered in darkness, but it's the people. That's why my point is, what can we do? Well, we are the sparks. We are the lights in the darkness. So wherever God sends us, wherever we're meant to be, you say, "Lord, take my hand today, show me where you want me to be." We must be the light of faith. I believe that we can turn this whole battle around, but it is our faith. I think we need to get our faith first. God will honor and listen to our prayers, but we're living in the times of persecution, tribulations. I mean, I have been arrested a few times over the years for my pro-life efforts, unlawfully, unwrongly. Thank God I was a criminal for a while during one of the persecutions that I went through for a year, and then it was overturned. I was wrongly overturned. So my faith sustained me and my family through that terrible, terrible persecution. So, like at the moment, I think that we have to keep saying everything's going to be okay. God is in control. As pro-life people, yeah, we must be involved in the pro-life movement. If we can't be actively involved, we must support the pregnancy care centers. We must be strong in times of elections and help do a wee bit. You know, like faith without good words is without good works is dead. It's like a body without breath, as it says in St. James. So we all have to do something. But I think that we can in our lifetime, and I continue to believe that we if we can make abortion unthinkable, and we can make it illegal again. But we have to really, really work. It's like pulling your sleeves up every day and saying, some people throw the towel in and say, we're not making any difference here. But how do you not know you're making that difference? And if you only saved one life, it would be like, you can, that will go before you, that you've done something to save a life or help someone to save a life. But I do think prayer is the most important thing above all. I know people would say, well, yeah, I do say prayer and action are like hand and glove. So it would be like we have to know where God wants us to be. Like my work at this stage in my life, as much as I will always be an activist, I'd never hang up my activist shoes. But I do know that I can save a lot more babies through pregnancy care. I mean, Heartbeat International is a US initiative. I'm affiliated. My clinic in Belfast is an ultrasound clinic. I can, women can come and have their ultrasound free. They can have care and support. So we're finding a way to give women hope. It's like the lighthouse. So we have to be the little lights, like what St. Patrick, the light dimmed because of the faith. So we have to really empower and become very passionate, faith-filled people, and be out in the public square. Let people, you can't hide your lights, you have to take it
Let
out
it
there.
shine.
I would always be very hopeful, but sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to be hopeful because you don't always see the fruit. But it's that Jesus, I trust in you, in every situation where we keep. And like St. Joseph, I have a great devotion to St. Joseph. And so we're coming up to that feast on Tuesday. So we have a great feast day tomorrow. And then we have another feast day. And then we're going into Holy Week next week. So yeah, we just can't give up. The battle is real. It's a spiritual battle, but God's given us as Catholics the spiritual tools. I mean, your rosary beads are the umbilical cord to our Blessed Mother. When you hold those in your hand, you are attached to our Blessed Mother as a baby is attached to in your womb as a woman. So even men can have the umbilical cord attachment, So you're like, we all can hold that rosary beads. St. Patrick Pius says it's a weapon. So maybe it's like reassessing who we are as Catholics, as Christians. Are we using our weapons? Do we believe, that with God all things are possible, even ending abortion? I mean, the United States has shown the way. I mean, no one would have ever have thought that that Roe v. Wade would have been overturned, even though things aren't perfect either. But it was a great time to celebrate that. I believe God brought that about. I do believe that because that would have been unheard of. But now state by state, so me it's like county by county, country by country, city by city. We're only where we're at, but where we're at, we can make the difference if we put our hand into our Blessed Mother's hand and know that Christ is leading the way. And then, good and faithful servants, and who knows, we believe in faith that things will change in our lifetime. But if they don't, and we go, we leave this earth and there's a lot more to do, we just hope that we've handed the torch on, that we have left our mark. We've left a mark, and that mark must be our faith and actions.
Well, Bernadette, I thank you so much for joining me today and talking about your story, what we can do, and all the great work you're doing. And please visit the website preciouslife.com to learn more about all the great work they're doing, to donate if you feel the leading to do that. Bernadette, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. It's great to finally getting to meet you after a couple of weeks. So
Oh, I know. Lovely too. It was like long time away, and I think we've been communicating since early February. And now we're,
we have.
but no, thank you so much. Sometimes I never get the chance to share, my own personal faith, and because I'm always so busy out on the battlefield all the time. So it's always lovely just to maybe just have the conversation. And I know I'm Irish. You can tell that I talk a lot. So, William, you've been very patient, I have to say. I've been just, as they say, ganshing on. Ganshing's a northern word. It just means you just talk a lot. Kiss about Blarney
All right.
Stone, as they say. But listen, have you a blessed weekend. I mean, St. Patrick, who's the patron saint of many in our Irish Americans, they'll be celebrating tomorrow.
They
You
will.
know, so like we have a great big saint there, and you know he's still on the case, and so is Saint Bridget. So, you know, so thank you, William, and Catholicism rocks, which is such a great title, because it does rock, and you know we're the, you know, it's built on the foundation stone of Peter, that
Right.
rock.